to the flatlands of Saskatchewan and the prairie town of McGee, where my mother had grown up and where her family homestead still stood. It was there that I got an inside view of Mom growing up prairie and her being schooled in a one-room schoolhouse followed by boarding school at a Roman Catholic convent in Rosetown. Her lifelong friend Yvonne Savage, her teenage partner in crime, reminisced with me of how she and Mom used to sneak out when the nuns weren't looking to go downtown, where they would hang out on Main Street singing Doris Day's hit single, Standing on the Corner.
Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Brother, you don't know a nicer occupation.
In reflecting upon my mother's childhood and on my ancestors' lived experiences, I recall stories my mother had told me about her mother's heartache at the fortune she'd left behind in North Dakota and her subsequent loss of family heirlooms that were destroyed when her matrimonial home was taken by fire, taking the house and all the family belongings with it, leaving the family homeless in the 1930s. I recall hearing that someone ran back into the burning house to retrieve Grandma Olive's sewing machine, the sole item that guaranteed income for the impoverished family and clothes for the children. I also recall the sadness and the quiet desperation at the family being separated and the parents having to farm out the little ones while Grandpa Jeremiah and the neighbors rebuilt a three-room shack to house 9 people. I think back to my mother's experience of the prairies in the 1930s. I am the big open spaces of southern Saskatchewan, where my mother played with paper dolls while she waited for the spring to come. By the 1940s, the spring had long since come and gone, and with all the children having grown up and moved away, my mother boarded a train in Saskatoon and headed west, en route to join her siblings in Victoria, B.C. She was 18 years old. My mother trained to become a nurse's aide in St. Joseph's Hospital and spent her spare time singing in St. Patrick's Cathedral Choir and attending dances through the Catholic Youth Organization. This is where she met my father and lifelong friends. As I envision my mom's lived experience, from leaving the prairie land to her family losing their home to a fire and having the community farmers coming together to build a home for her family, I recall my own visit to her childhood home. As I walked that land, I thought about the great-greats leaving the Red River Valley for the Canadian prairie. I thought about the green hills of Ireland, where my kin rose up from, and my Dublin, where Molly Malone sold her wares along the ancient cobblestone streets, the same streets that my kin once walked. Oh, I am the fiery fields of Dublin, Ireland, where my great-grandmother told tales by candlelight while she waited for the struggle of the famine and of the drink to end. When my mother passed away so many years ago, much was lost. Grief pulled at me to understand her life and her losses. This led me to research her lived experience. As is often the case for many people, it takes a death to wake up. Because we come to realize that we do not have all the time in the world, we are called to attention. By researching my mother's life, I was able to pull her silence out of the shadows, much like my ancestors, much like my own sweet Molly Malone.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone, as she wheeled her wheelbarrow through the streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
Alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
He was a fishmonger, and sure 'twas no wonder, for so were her father and mother before. And they wheeled their barrow through the streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
Alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
She died of a fever, and sure no one could save her, and that was the end of sweet Molly Malone. Now her ghost wheels her barrow through the streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
Alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh.
Radio Tale number 2. You are a song.
And I was nighttime. I one day woke up to find her lying beside my bed. I softly said, come take me, for I've been lonely, someone, as though I've done someone wrong somewhere, but I don't know where. I don't know where. Come lately, you are the sun, I am the moon, you are the words, I am.
I don't know what makes any of us who we are. For the most part, we are a mathematical equation gone right, a science experiment in the making, a creative endeavor, a work in progress. In terms of our biological makeup, our DNA, most of us share the same elements of design, give or take. But what makes us, us? As far back as I can remember, I have been exploring this question, first as a preschool child who was engaged in free play and stretching the imagination, then as a grade school student. The first song I remember learning in school was Punchinello, a song that explored the possibilities of imagination within movement and voice. As a group of children form a circle around one child who stands in the center and takes on the characteristics of Punchinello, that child then makes those movements and sounds to personify the character that they have chosen, and the other children will imitate that child. I also also recall songs that helped me to identify with my body. I remember grade school teachers using music to teach the parts of the body, as well as language that incorporated such concepts as dance and embodiment, drama and performance, as well as science and metacognition. One such song that I take from my childhood is the traditional song, The Hokey Pokey, which was made famous in the 1950s by American bandleader Ray Anthony.
You put your right foot in, you put your right foot out, you put your right foot in and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about.
Left foot.
You put your left foot in, you put your left foot out, you put your left foot in and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around.
While both of these songs are one way for children to learn about their bodies while also being silly and having fun, as children grow up with these songs, they come to realize how their bodies are much more than the sum of all its parts and functions. Our body is, in fact, a vessel of knowledge and a way of knowing, something Helene Siu speaks of in The Laugh of the Medusa. Censor the body and you censor the breath and speech at the same time, and she advises us to write yourself, for the body must be heard. Similarly, SFU professor Celeste Snober, who notes that there is an art to listening to our lives for research, says that it is not only an outward endeavor, but that it travels in the realm of researching our own lives, knowledge, passions, and practice. Snober also goes on to suggest ways in which we can listen. It is not just an activity of the mind, but everything within us, mind, heart, body, soul, imagination, and cognition. Or one could say it is fingers, toes, pelvis, hips, neck, breath, and shoulders. Listening to the body is one of the greatest gifts we are given as humans. Listening is hearing the bold proclamations and subtle sensations. Writing the body can also be an opportunity to use the arts to speak out against injustice and to stand up for something you believe in. This is something that Lady Gaga achieves through her recording of the song Till It Happens to You, a song that she co-wrote with Diane Warren for the 2015 documentary The Hunting Ground, a film that addresses campus rape in the United States.
You tell me it gets better in time. You say I pull myself together, pull it together, you'll be fine. Tell me what the hell do you know, what do you know? Tell me how the hell could you know, how could you know? Till it happens to you, you don't know how it feels, how it feels. Till it happens to you, you won't know, it won't be real, no it won't be real. Hold your head up and be strong. 'Cause when you fall, you gotta get up. You gotta get up and move on. Tell me how the hell could you talk? How can you talk? 'Cause until you walk where I walk, it's just no talk. Till it happens to you.
In another example, Canadian songwriter Melanie Safka uses her music to speak out against the tumultuous relationship between the advertising industry and the music industry. This is illustrated in her song, Look What They've Done to My Song, Ma. The song was originally written and recorded by Safka in 1970, and the song was later recorded by Miley Cyrus in her 2015 Backyard Sessions. Both versions present the lyrics in a playful, oh well, sort of way.
Look what they done to my song, Ma. Look what they done to my song, Ma. It was the only thing I could do half right, and it's turning out all wrong, Ma. Look what they done to my song.
Makes any of us us? What content exemplifies our gifts as individuals? What frame best fits the story we have to tell, the song we yearn to sing, the identity we long to unfold? In 2001, Colombian singer Shakira championed people in recognition of them as unique beings, illustrated through the metaphor in her hit single, Underneath Your Clothes.
Your song, written by the hands of God. Don't get me wrong, 'cause this might sound to you a bit odd, but you own the place where all my thoughts go hiding. Right under your clothes is where.
While we are, as Shakira suggests, unique just as we are similar, a song, and possess our own song, an imprint on the world, a signature, if you will. This is something Cowboy Junkie's frontwoman Margot Timmons sings of in Musical Key, a song off the band's 1996 album Lay It Down, a song that acknowledges her mother and her father and how they brought music to her life. Regardless of the art that we bring forward, how we contribute will determine how and if we are heard. American dancer and choreographer Martha Graham, whose technique reshaped American dance and is still taught worldwide, suggests that great dancers are not great because of their technique, but because of their passion. That said, regardless of whether our gifts are woven into works of art that embody words, film, music, dance, canvas, or art books, stage, or song, it is our intention and enthusiasm behind the work that will make it great. While a skill is a technique that we learn and a talent is something we are born with, it is only through hard work, intention, and passion that we bring these two together and dream it into being. If we believe, as many suggest, that a talent is a gift from God, a calling, a responsibility that is specific to us, this would suggest that if we don't use our gifts, they will, as noted above, never exist again. Being a powerful thought to consider, it indicates just how unique each of us really is. As previous radio tales have indicated, for the duration of my grad school years and the writing and recording of radio tales throughout, I have often reflected upon my mother's lived experience. This process has not only shone a light on my mother's heartache, but as well on her tenacity to becoming happy. As a result, despite the difficult parts of her life, the breakdowns, the hospitalizations, the many bouts of shock treatment, and their horrible detrimental effects, in the end, my mother just wanted to be happy. Perhaps that is why she loved the arts so much. Music, films, stories of plight and triumph. These were spaces of hope where she could lose herself. If I could sum up my mother's life in one lyrical motto, it might be the Carpenters' 1973 hit single, Sing. Although the song was originally written in 1971 by Joe Raposo for the children's television show Sesame Street, it gained notoriety when recorded by the said brother and sister duet, reaching number 3 on the 1973 Billboard Hot 100. In many respects, my mother kept it simple. Perhaps that is why, despite the hardships of her life, that she lived as long as she did, because, after all, she always managed to sing her song.
Sing, sing a song, sing out loud, sing out strong.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Arts Edge. This has been Annie Roach bringing you music to illustrate the stories of our lives. Tune in again next week for more stories at The Arts Edge. And stay tuned to The Jambalaya Show coming up next with Emily. And now I leave you with one final tune. It is a medley that was originally written for the 1967 musical Hair, with lyrics by James Ratto and Jerome Ragney, and music by Galt McDermott. 2 years after the original recording, it was released as a single by American R&B group The Fifth Dimension. It is a song that, to me, depicts the 60s and makes me want to dance. So sit back and have a listen. The Age of Aquarius. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend.
The dawning. Cachet is a gallery like no other. This non-profit gallery aims to discuss issues relating to mental health by educating the public and promoting equal justice for all. The Cachet Gallery empowers artists by healing them through their art. There are new shows every month. To learn more about the gallery, go to the website cachet.org. Come out and be inspired.